Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, and looks to be good, could be crazy. It's kind of a slash martini there at the end. Jim, let's start with our first good martini. We have at least 2.5 good martinis. I think that's worth celebrating lately. Let's go out to the middle of the Pacific Ocean for our first good one. This is courtesy of ABC News. The United States has successfully intercepted an intercontinental ballistic missile during the first test of its ground-based intercept system, the U.S. Missile Defense Agency said Tuesday. The test occurred just days after the North Korean regime launched its 9th missile this year. U.S. officials say today's test had been planned for years. The ground-based interceptor launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California shortly after 3:30 Eastern Time. A little more than 1 hour later, the Pentagon confirmed that it had successfully collided with an ICBM-class target over the Pacific Ocean. The ICBM target was launched from the, of course, Ronald Reagan Ballistic Missile Defense Test Site in the Marshall Islands, 4,200 miles away. So, Jim, if this was long planned, it certainly was very convenient timing. The North Koreans have been rattling the saber. Kim Jong-un saying he had a special package or something like that for the United States after this latest missile test. U.S. defense officials seem to be saying that their missile defense technology is outpacing the North Koreans' ability to put together a successful ICBM. So, great news.
This news comes along at exactly the right time. The Trump administration has been hoping for China to be able to lean on North Korea in a way that will get them to alter their behavior. The Chinese have indeed taken some steps, but so far you'd have to say that the North Korean regime has not really changed its behavior. And rhetoric and threatening and missile tests and things like that. There's really no indication that there is such a thing as enough Chinese pressure to change the way they're acting. I think the problem with the North Korean regime is the regime. This is just kind of baked into their nature of how they see the world and how they see that they can get what they want on the international stage. If they threaten enough, they think people will at some point start sending them aid, make concessions and things like that. This is exactly the sort of thing we want to see because, look, we're in a situation where if North Korea fires off an ICBM, once it clears the ground, we have very few options up until the development of this program to stop it. And that means, if it hits Hawaii, if it hits somewhere on the West Coast, if it is aimed towards carrier groups or stuff or targets like that, there's really very little option to stop that, and the results would be catastrophic. So. Obviously, this is a very symbolic gesture, extremely well-timed. And look, we'll never see a perfectly safe world. But when you see weapons like this starting to make headway, it is one more step closer to a safer world. And at a time like this, it's exactly what you want to see.
All right, Jim, moving on now to our second good martini. And this is one that we've addressed before, but given all the different quote-unquote bombshells and breaking news on the Trump/Russia investigation, it's good to know that there isn't any evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. The latest person to do this, again, is the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. No great friend of ours here on the Three Martini Lunch, but he has said this now on at least two, if not three, occasions. This time he's talking to Chris Cuomo at CNN.
With specific respect to the issue of collusion, as I've said before, I testified to this effect. I saw no direct evidence of political collusion between the campaign and the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Now clarify that point.
That's not to say,
that point,
not to say there wasn't any, but I just didn't see evidence of it before I left.
So Cuomo, of course, not happy about that, Jim. So he asked him to clarify again, and Clapper basically said the exact same thing. I haven't seen anything. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but I've seen nothing. So you got Al Franken out there demanding, that this is headed towards impeachment. Max,
he went even further, Greg. He said everything points to collusion between the Trump team and Russia. Everything!
Right.
I understand he's a member of the Senate. We can't really make the Stuart Smalley jokes anymore, but you'd think Clapper would have been in the loop there and would have picked up on this. Look, this is a continuing series, Greg, that the Democrats and a lot of Trump haters I looked it up the other day in a piece for NRO, and I found out, Greg, that 80% of Democrats supported the impeachment of Trump 3 weeks into his presidency. So when people say, oh, this is all about Comey, oh, this is all about – they were convinced. They just want him out, and they'll figure out the reasons later. So that's, you know, the cart is it's shiny, it's all set, it's ready to go, and they're just looking for the horse. Yes, they did put the cart before the horse. So here's the thing. Maybe the NSA and the CIA and the FBI counterintelligence guys, all of them who are really good at their jobs, will find something and go, aha, here it is. Here is Trump talking to somebody in the Russian government saying, you guys help elect me, I will repeal the sanctions and we will rule the world together, wahahaha. You know, there'll be something there. You say, okay, well, there you go. That's evidence of collusion. They definitely work together. My guess is you're not going to find that. And the reason I say that, and look, I don't have I'm not omniscient. I don't have all seeing powers and visions and all that kind of stuff. I just kind of figure that that obviously, you know, Trump did not just suddenly appear out of nowhere the day before Election Day, right? So in this possibility of Russia attempting to muck around in the election and the hacking of the DNC and the hacking of Podesta, all of that happened several weeks and several months before Election Day. You know, was the FBI asleep at that time? Was the NSA and CIA not paying attention to this? I assume they'd be watching the Russian government pretty darn closely because that's their job. If at some point the FBI or our intelligence agencies come out with this smoking gun bit of evidence, you know, the message is going to be, America, we just found out that the president was working with the Russians and was arguably committing treason to win the election. Sorry we didn't tell you before Election Day. You think Comey's reputation is controversial now, right? I mean, this is exactly the sort of information the American people really would have enjoyed having sometime before the election, and not like, you know, 6 months or a year or some period of time after Trump has been already been sworn in. They didn't find it before the election. They didn't find it before the Electoral College voted. They didn't find it before Inauguration Day, and you had to figure everybody in the intelligence community had every incentive in the world to find it if it existed during that time period. So, again, this doesn't mean it's impossible they're going to find it, but I think it says something that Clapper said, yeah, I didn't see anything. And I think that somebody like Al Franken is, you know, wish casting, basically. He wants to believe that there's going to be collusion there, so he's insisting that if you hold everything he knows at just the right angle, you can see the collusion there. As opposed to just, you know, Russia wanted to muck around, cause chaos in the election, undermine faith in whoever won the election, and, you know, looks like they've achieved a good portion of their goal.
Yeah, no doubt. So they're probably the big winners here, unfortunately. All right, let's move on to the third martini, Jim. We've had a lot of bad/crazy martinis over the years. I'm not sure if we've ever had a good/crazy martini, but these are special times we're living in, and that's our third martini for today. It seemed like very good news. This morning, this is from the New York Times. President Trump is expected to withdraw the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement. Three officials with knowledge of the decision said, making good on a campaign pledge, but severely weakening the landmark 2015 climate change accord that committed nearly every nation to take action to curb the warming of the planet. A senior White House official cautioned that the specific language of the president's expected announcement was still in flux Wednesday morning. The official said the withdrawal might be accompanied by legal caveats that will shape the impact of Mr. Trump's decision. Apparently, one of the people not necessarily in on the final language or the final construct of the language here, Jim, is President Trump, because that news about his decision broke, I think, before 8 o'clock this morning Eastern Time. At 9:08 this morning, he tweets, "I will be announcing my decision on the Paris Accord over the next few days. Make America great again." Now, since that's the campaign slogan, you might take that to mean that he's going to follow through on the campaign promise, which he made over and over and over again. And obviously, if he does, that would be very good news and pretty impressive, actually, given all the blowback he got at the G7 summit and elsewhere regarding this decision. But the fact that everybody doesn't seem to be on the same page here, and we might have jumped the gun on this story, or somebody at the White House did, is a little bit puzzling.
Yeah, this is one of those moments where we were ready to make this our third good martini.
Yes.
We were ready to be very salute this and talk about this and talk about the inanity of these cries and howls of outrage. Crowls of outrage are what you get when there's such a cry and a howl at the same time. It's a really ugly noise. That kind of reaction when the president formally withdraws from an international agreement that was never ratified by the Senate and has no actual enforcement mechanisms. But what's really kind of interesting, this is from, you know, Phil Rucker over at the Washington Post. And he says, well, wait a second. I'm being told that Trump has not made a decision and that his climate meetings today to kind of, you know, go over the decision and review it before he actually makes it. Now, I think Joe Scarborough made the observation that during the campaign, some of his advisors would leak to the press the decision before he actually made the decision in order to box him in. I seem to remember some of this discussion going on about the Mike Pence decision. I think we can look back and say that decision worked out pretty well for Trump. But if that really is what's going on, it is really disturbing because I'd love to know who these advisors are. Because if you do this, you're not really helping Trump, right? Imagine if he looks at everything, he goes through the meetings today, and he says, you know what, there's no enforcement mechanism, so I don't really think it's going to hurt the economy that much. We can just ignore it, and I don't have to take the political hit and all the grief and aggravation that comes from formally withdrawing, so I'm not going to formally withdraw. Now, that'd be a very cynical move, but he could do that. So then all of the talk of this morning turns out to be wrong, and you could say, ah, well, it makes the media look bad. Well, actually, okay, but it's the Trump advisors who are telling them this. I don't think, you know, the media is not going to make up news about Trump that they don't want to see. Undoubtedly, somebody is speaking on behalf of the White House who doesn't actually know what the decision is, and this is kind of points to this, you know, dysfunctional decision-making process. At some point, you kind of you have your meetings, and you say what you're doing. Now, if somebody had said, look, the president is leaning against it, I think we all kind of expect the president to either formally withdraw or to kind of, you know, certainly downplay or certainly not prioritize keeping the promises that the Obama administration made in the Paris Accord. But really, this is – it just looks extremely disorganized. Look, maybe tomorrow or, you know, the next day or at some point in the not-distant future, Trump says, yes, I am, and everybody forgets about this. But it is not good to have – various White House officials speaking on behalf of the president when the president hasn't yet made the decision.
These anonymous sources, Jim, you can never trust those anonymous sources.
There are times the president has a very legitimate gripe. This would appear to be one of them.
Oh, very good. Well, 2.5 good martinis isn't too shabby. 3 would have been better, but maybe we can make it a good martini later on if he, in fact, follows through on his original promise. So we'll be keeping track. Jim, have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.